welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Hit us up, ladies and gents. We want to hear what's on your mind. We want you to be a part of the hands-on discussion all the time, each and every show. Tons to talk about today, tons to debate about today, just a lot of action going on to close out this week. And of course, you know that you can give us a ring at 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We want to know what's on your mind. So, what a week, what a week, what a week. Man, I can't believe that it's Friday already, and we've covered so much on this week of Current Sports, from homosexuality in sports during the beginning of the week to charity events with the whole Kick for the House event kicking off tomorrow. We had Jimmy Cotter come out and join us on the show to talk about that, to local basketball camps in the area with Coach Fenimore discussing that on yesterday's show. Man, it's been fantastic and a lot of fun. And as always, we want to conclude the week with a bang. Now, the way we do that is we're going to hit the racetrack. Today, I have the privilege of welcoming the publisher of the magazine, The Midwest Racing Scene. Now, he's been covering the world of racing dating all the way back to 1984. Yes, he's a vet in the business. Terry Fitzwater, welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, thanks, Al. Great to be on the radio with you.
Oh, no problem. Pleasure to have you, man. So, Terry, first of all, what attracted you to the world of racing, and what made you want to cover it, man? How'd you get into the business?
Well, actually, I've been in the newspaper business for a long time. I've been editors of papers, publishers of papers. I used to be the publisher of all the newspapers that surrounded Lansing before Gannett bought them out. But right, my dad raced before he got married, and you know, some of my earliest memories are listening to Sid Collins as a youngster growing up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I couldn't have been 3 or 4 years old, and my dad had the radio on. My mom wouldn't let him listen to the race, so he'd find some obnoxious chore for me to do out in the yard while we listened to the Indy 500. And from there, you know, we went to short tracks around the state of Michigan growing up, and about 11 years ago decided there wasn't a paper that was really promoting racing like it needed to be. There was another couple other publications in the Midwest, but that's when I started my paper, and it took off. And actually, I think I'm the last of the dinosaurs, because there are no other race publications left.
Right, I know, quickly fading, man. But well, congrats on that, and staying alive throughout the years, man. So I see that racing has been in your blood for quite some time.
That's right. And I didn't know, you know, this was an interesting story I found out in the 1990s. I was doing some stuff in Grand Rapids, and Scott Brayton, who won the pole at Indy a couple times, was a friend of mine, and he drove for Amway, and they ended up flying a bunch of media people down to Indianapolis for tire testing during the month of May.
Yeah.
Long story short, I asked them if I could take my dad along on it, because they flew us on their private jet, which was pretty nice.
Wow.
So we flew into Indy, and I had my dad with me, and no, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but anyway, when we were there, my dad ended up meeting a guy that he used to race against. His name was Duke Nalen, and Duke sat on the pole at the Indy 500 for 2 years in the early 50s, and right. So I did not know that whole racing career of my dad racing against guys like the Unser family, A.J. Foy, Jack Cheeseboro, Roger Ward, Duke Nalen, all out west, Winston West Series in the 50s, so... So it's been in our family blood for a long time.
Without a doubt. So did you race yourself at any point?
No, I never did. You know, I was always told by my family that I drove too fast, but no, I never got in a race car. But I was always, always late covering meetings or going to meetings or
right.
stuff. And, you know, I've been around the Lansing area for a number of years. And, you know, I used to do an auto column for the Lansing State Journal years ago, and that's just one of the things I've been doing.
People, we are talking with Terry Fitzwater, publisher of the magazine The Midwest Racing Scene. He's been covering the world of racing dating all the way back to 1984. Now, Terry, since you cover the world of racing, naturally that sort of makes you kind of like an advocate for the sport. Now, what differentiates racing from other sports?
Well, racing everybody thinks it's an individual sport because there's one driver in the car, but it is more of a team sport, because if you don't have a good pit crew, you don't have a good engine shop, you don't have good engineers, you're not going to win. So it takes a lot of teamwork. And of course, racing's one of the, you know, maybe the only major sport that, you know, you could get in the car and by the end of the day you might not get out alive.
Right.
It's a dangerous sport, but it's very exhilarating. If you know, a lot of people just say, well, you know, you watch racing on TV and they just go round and round, you know, it's pretty boring. You have to go to a race and see it live. I guess it's like going to a hockey match. A lot of people don't like watching hockey on TV.
Right.
But once you see it live, you become addicted to it. It's fast paced, and with racing, you know, there's other things that go along with it. You have the smells, the sounds, the taste of racing. It's unlike any other sport, actually.
Nothing like it, man. Now, I want to harp on that point, because there are many people out there, including a lot of my friends, who argue, and I get into this argument all of the time. They argue with me that drivers, when it comes to NASCAR and Indy, any driving motorsport for that matter, are not athletes, because they say that they're just sitting in the car making left turns. What do you think of that criticism, man, when you hear that?
Well, they don't know what they're talking about, because these guys that are driving, when you're going, let's just say you're in Indianapolis and you're in an Indy car and you're going 230 miles an hour down the main straightaway, when you turn left, you're getting 3 or 4 G's. The type of pressure that and stress that's put on your body in these cars, and you make that left-hand turn, you know, 800 times on a 400-mile race, it's, you know, fighter pilots are about the only thing that you can compare it to. So if you're not in good shape and you're not an athlete or have that athletic training,
yeah,
you're not going to finish in NASCAR, because you just won't survive the race.
Now, Terry, you talk about that training. For a NASCAR athlete, that training has to be a little different than any other sport, because mentally you have to be in a certain mindset to be able to sit in a car that long and deal with the heat and, you know, like I said, going that fast around corners and dealing with G-forces. What's the training like for a NASCAR athlete physically?
Well, you know, ironically, it has only come to, you know, the training has really picked up in the last 20 years, and I think you look at guys like Mark Martin, who started doing the workouts because they were so physically tired after the races. Some of the old guys, you know, you see the Benny Parsons, they get out, man, they're going to sit there and they're going to drink their beers and everybody's
right,
going to have fun.
Right.
But it became much more specialized, and I think Mark Martin is probably the poster child. He started the weight training program, and, you know, now you look at a guy like Carl Edwards, he's in all the body training, you know, magazines and stuff like that. But, you know, you got to do a lot of cardio. Weightlifting is important, but the cardio is really important, because you're like you said, you're sitting in a car that could be up to 160, 180 degrees. You're in there for 4 hours,
hard,
no fluids, and the, like I said, the stress just from the G forces and making the turns is enough to wipe you out. But then the concentration, because you've got to hit your marks. You don't go into the corner in just the right spot, you're going to crash into the wall. And then imagine you got four other, you know, 4,000-pound machines sitting on either side of you.
Right.
So the concentration, I mean, you have to be at the top of your game. If everybody could do it, they would be.
Exactly. Very true. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Terry Fitzwater. He is publisher of the Midwest Racing Scene, and also he's been covering racing for quite a long time, dating all the way back to 1984. Now, Terry, you talk about the crashes, and of course, when it comes to racing motorsports, you know, we hear about fatal accidents all the time. Now, you've met many individuals throughout your career in covering racing. One of those individuals happens to be Jason Leffler, a racer who sadly passed away during a heat race event in New Jersey a few weeks ago. Now, you actually knew Jason. Talk a little bit about that, Terry.
I first met Jason back in the you know, late 1990s. Was, you know, he made his bones actually racing midget cars. And for those people out there who aren't that familiar with midgets, they're open wheel cars.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look like the stock cars that you see in Indy, you know, on TV and NASCAR.
Right.
But you know, he was in the National Midget Car Hall of Fame. And he won a number of national championships running midgets. When he, I met him when he started getting into the Nationwide Series in the early 2000s. Interviewed him for a story I was doing. Nice guy. A lot of guys that you talk to, and you know this from interviewing some pro guys.
Yeah.
You know, they just kind of, you know, you can see their eyes glaze over. They give you the pat answers. They look, you know, like you're
right.
Not even there.
Real generic.
This guy made eye contact with you. You felt like he was engaged in the conversation. And then he started teasing you back and joking around. He was just
right.
A good, good person. And everybody who met him liked him. Good family man. You know, he's unfortunately died, leaving a 5-year-old son. But he was a good guy. And, you know, he actually had some success in the Nationwide Series. He won a couple races. He won won in Nashville in 2004. I saw him win at Indianapolis Raceway Park in 2007. And, you know, and they just said, you know, just afterwards, you know, I'd interviewed him, you know, like 5 years before.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in Victory Lane in 2007, he said, "Hey, Terry, you know, I haven't seen the guy in 5 years.
Wow.
I've met him one time." And then he remembers your name.
And he remembered you. Wow.
Yeah. So that to me, I'm impressed with that.
Yeah, that's very impressive, man. Like you said, I mean, like when you talk about, you know, because I've interviewed individuals, and there's a certain individual interview who just have that personable type of personality where they know your name even though you interviewed them once, and they're just real good guys. You know what I mean? And that's what I've heard about Jason.
Yeah, and it's true. And then you look at, you know, at his funeral, you got guys like Dale Earnhardt Jr., you know, who even though he wasn't, you know, he ran in the Cup Series for about 3 or 4 years, ran 73 races in the Cup Series. But, you know, he dies, and, you know, a lot of the Cup guys went to the funeral out of respect. These guys' schedule is so busy during the summer. And they don't like that stuff thrown up in their face. But, you know, but they, out of respect, you got guys, the one seeing them. And I have not heard anybody say anything bad about Jason Loeffler. And, you know, you look at all the tributes that are paid. On the day of his funeral at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, they had hit the date of his birth up on the pagoda in lights to honor him. And, you know, and for a guy who wasn't a 7-time champion like Richard Petty or Dale Earnhardt Sr., for them to, it was just out of the affection and, you know, and just how people liked him that he's gotten a lot more notoriety.
Yeah, that's saying a lot, man. So when you heard about Jason's death, how did you respond? Where were you at? I mean, how did you get the news? I mean, and what was going through your head?
Well, I was actually at my home office. It was in the evening, and I got a call from a friend of mine from out east, and he said, "Have you heard about Jason?" And I know a lot of guys named Jason. They said,
right.
You know, and given the type of friends that I have, all right, who went to jail?
right. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So he said, yeah, Jason Loeffler. He was in a bad crash at Bridgeport, which is in New Jersey, and he's dead. And I was just stunned. And so right away, you know, I got on the internet and saw it. And, you know, I got to admit, I should have teared. You know, just he's one of the good guys. You don't expect that. You know, you always know the possibilities there. But you just don't expect it. So when it does, and it happens to, you know, one of the good guys in the sport, you don't want to see that to happen to anybody. When it happens to one of the really good people that you've met in your life, it affects you a little bit, and I think that's why people are still talking about it, even though it's been a couple of weeks now.
Yes, and like you said, we're talking about it right now. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Terry Fitzwater. He is the publisher of the Midwest Racing Scene magazine. Been covering racing since 1984. So, you know, Terry, before we start this interview, I'm just sitting in my office, and I said, let me just Google a list of drivers, motorcyclists, spectators that have died during racing events. And the list of names it was off the charts. Now, what innovations are being made to make this sport safer?
Well, there's one that might, you know, that if Jason had used this, that came about because of another crash, he might be living today. It's called the Hans device, and Dale Earnhardt Sr. And it was created after Dale Earnhardt Sr. was killed in the crash at Daytona to try and keep people's head and neck in place so they don't get that whiplash effect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Jason in the sprint car, and sprint cars are much more unstable when they crash. You know, they tend to flip a lot, so that's what happened to him. Flipped it, and so the autopsy proved that it was a head whip type injury that snapped his neck and killed him. And if he had a Hans device, some of the top racing safety experts like Bill Simpson said he could still be alive today if he had been wearing the Hans device.
Wow! So the Hans device kind of just keeps your head locked into the car, I guess.
It keeps it from moving around so that you don't have that whiplash. Because imagine, it's like, remember when you played crack the whip as a kid?
Yeah.
That's what happens to your neck. You're going 150, 160 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you start flipping violently, you know, and if your head isn't restrained, or if there's not an area, a cocoon area, so that it doesn't move, yeah, you can snap your neck, and that's exactly what happened to Jason.
Man, truly, truly a sad instance, but, you know, the situation happened to Jason. So other than the Heinz device, what other innovations are being made, Terry?
Well, and you know what, here's another two things, but, you know, short tracks really can't afford it. And this started coming about because of all, you know, as technology has improved over the years, the car seat can go faster and faster. And now they actually try and slow them down because engineers find a way to get that extra little bit of horsepower, extra few miles per hour to beat their competition.
Right.
Years ago, because of all the violent crashes in the walls, the University of Nebraska came up with a thing that's called the Safer Barrier. And at the Michigan International Speedway and all the tracks on NASCAR, they have this barrier that they put around the wall instead of you just hitting the cement that gives a little bit, which helps absorb that shock and that speed when you hit. Now, I don't know of any short tracks in Michigan or basically around the country that have it because it's so expensive. Bridgeport, where Jason was killed, did not have that, and that may have helped him if they did, but it's something to absorb that, you know, that awesome speed and G-forces that hit, you know, that compress the body.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two big ones. And again, these go back to, you know, when Dale Earnhardt died, you know, a lot of safety talk started up again. And it always seems to happen when one of the top drivers dies, and then they, you know, the improvements in safety grow by leaps and bounds.
Right. And you know, something that surprised me, Terry, when I was looking at this, and I think it was last month or a few months ago with the IndyCar race and actually spectators who were injured due to a crash in the wall. I mean, I had no idea of the amount of spectators who are also at risk out there when a crash happens towards the wall. I mean, I've heard talks of raising the fences. I mean, what is being done in that regard to make sure that fans just watching the sport are okay and safe?
Well, it's one thing that track promoters and track owners all over the country, they talk about it a lot at their national meetings. Here in Michigan, which is one of the top states as far as racetrack promoters working together to try and to figure out how to make more money, but two, how to improve the safety for both their drivers and their fans, the Michigan Speedway promoters. They have experts come in all the time and talk about it. Years ago, you know, when I first started following racing in the 1960s, I was at Berlin Raceway in the 60s when a car actually flew through the fence and actually went in the stands and killed a number of people in the stands.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what they've done is to make the fences where there's an overhang, so and the steel reinforcement, so when these cars hit it, it gathers and keeps the debris inside the track. And one of the biggest things that's been dangerous for the fans is tires coming off the cars and going into the stands. And now you'll see a lot of the national traveling series like IndyCar where they actually tether the tires to the car so that something happens so these tires don't get launched. But they've extended the fences further and further up in the air and arched over the track to try and collect it. Now, granted, sometimes, you know, just as in anything, you can't protect everything. And so, yeah, there's always slightly at risk, but, if you love racing, you're going, and, I always tell told my kids, sit higher up.
Right.
Don't sit right next to the fence.
Right. It's because, all about the love of the sport, right?
That's right. But and you can see more when you sit a little higher. But, if there is going to be something that happens, when you're in the first row there, that's probably when, that you can get a lot of shrapnel that'll come through when a car hits the fence or the wall.
Man, now Terry, switching the subject a little bit now, there have been many reports recently that NASCAR's attendance is growing and climbing year by year. What do you credit this with?
Well, I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
All you got to do is watch the races on TV. The NASCAR fan growth grew exponentially back in the 90s and early 2000s into the mid-2000s. If you looked at Dover a few weeks ago, you know, the place was, it seemed like it was only 70% full. You look at what they've done at Michigan, the June race at Michigan, attendance was down, and those stands in turn three of Michigan, they're empty, and they've already taken out a number of stands between turns three and four, and they couldn't fill the place. Now, they're talking that they're going to have a better attendance thing in August, but for years at Michigan, attendance has declined. Now, I attribute it, one, to the economy in Michigan, but, and maybe nationwide, because NASCAR, as it grew, so did the prices of going. You used to be able to go, pay $25 to $50 to get an MIS. Now you want to get those big tickets, you're going to pay $100 and some.
Mm.
You know, your weekends on the infield, when they used to have your parking spot for the infield was $40 for the weekend and $25 to get in. Now you're paying $150 for your spot and $100 for a race pass.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so when you start looking at it, now it costs a lot more. And, in a track like Michigan where you have two races, where people used to go to both races, now it's like, if it's going to cost me $500 to $750 for 3 or 4 days, I can go one time, but I can't go two times.
Right.
And that's really hurt it. I'm not saying that the popularity, but people are staying home more, one, because of the cost, and two, and I think the drivers have changed. There are still some guys who go out and sign autographs, and they used to be a lot more accessible, and they still may be more accessible than other sports. But the growth of the sport was from the guys like Richard Petty, the Terry Labontes, and
yeah. The
guys who would stay after the race and sign autographs until everybody who wanted an autograph got one. Now there's appearance fees for drivers just to sign autographs. So that's taken some of the
So no forward. Drivers really sign autographs after an event, huh?
Yeah, they're in their helicopter going home.
Wow.
That's how much money is coming to the sport. Well, if you're going to have that kind of money, somebody's going to pay for it, and it's always the fans. And so you see that the attendance has gone down substantially over the last few years, but it's starting to make a comeback. I think that the racing's gotten better with this new car that they've got. They want to see people, race each other as opposed to single-file racing.
Mm.
So that I think that's brought a little bit more interest back. And plus, NASCAR's taken more of the hands-off. Where before, when I grew up, after a race, if somebody didn't like what somebody did on the track, you just look where the crowd was because there was a fight in the pits, and that's how they settled it.
Right.
Now, you do anything wrong, you're fined. And, so they're teaching
too
these
soft.
Guys just to be, Stepford driver.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
so, I know what you mean on that one.
Yeah, let me. And I think that's because of social media and stuff. You got to be politically correct.
Right.
But the guys that seem to be, some of the more popular guys like Tony Stewart, Smoke. He was known as the guy out of temper, came back. But, people respect him, one, because he'll drive anything. And two, he speaks his mind. He's a person, and you know who he is.
Exactly. Very true. So, Terry, when you talk about this, the declining popularity, I guess, where do you think the state of racing will be in 5 to 10 years?
I don't see it declining a lot more unless the costs keep going up. Well, the one thing that's real interesting, and it's a kind of a antagonistic issue. One, that there are a lot of people saying where you got to get young people involved in racing. They'll go watch NASCAR because it's a party.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not showing up as much at the short track. So track owners are trying to get kids more involved, with the quarter midgets and, at the go-kart tracks and stuff like that to try and build the next generation. So that's an issue because older people will go short track racing, but the young people will flock to the NASCAR tracks for the party.
Right.
The one thing that is improving, and you see a lot more of now, is the females.
Mm.
Women are getting into the sport. They're starting younger. You have young women racers. And I think that the biggest thing change you're going to see at the higher level of sports in 10, 15 years, you're not going to see gentlemen start your engines. It's going to be ladies and gentlemen start your engines because there's going to be a lot of women racing.
And does that have to do with Danica Patrick's effect on the game?
Nothing at all. I think that, I take that back. Yeah, I'm sure Danica has some interest, influence on it because girls want to grow up to be like Danica.
Yeah.
But that, before the Danica factor started, you could see more and more women getting involved in racing. At the go-kart tracks right now, you see a lot of girls racing. And at the short tracks around the state of Michigan and the Midwest, there's a lot more women involved in racing. Matter of fact, I just talked to two yesterday. There are some gals from Williamston, Michigan, and one of them is going to be racing at Spartan Speedway tonight.
Nice.
In Lansing, and the other one is going to be racing in a dirt late model car, and she's going to be at I-96 Speedway. And instead of going out for cheerleading or something like that, the two Carpenter girls who drive for Liskey's down in downtown Lansing, they're going racing on Friday and Saturday night.
Wow, that is very, very interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Terry Fitzwater, a publisher of the Midwest Racing Scene, been covering racing since 1984. So, Terry, real quickly, how can people pick up a copy of the Midwest Racing Scene?
The easiest way is I'm going to give out my first of all, you can go to www.midwestracingscene.com, or you can go like us on Facebook, and there's information there. Or just give me a call at 517-930-1368. That's 930-1368. And we can send you some individual copies or get a subscription for you. And it covers almost every track in the state of Michigan. It covers a lot of the tracks in Indiana and Ohio as well.
There you have it. He is the man, the publisher of the magazine, Midwest Racing Scene. Go get a copy or go get a subscription. He's been covering the world of racing since 1984. Terry Fitzwater, thanks so much for joining us here at Current Sports, man.
All right, thanks, man, and good luck to you, buddy.
Thanks a lot, Terry. All right, when we return to Current Sports, we'll dive into our Current Sports section of the show. We'll let you know we'll be taking your calls at 140. Don't hesitate to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527 and let us hear your thoughts on any of today's topics. Want to hear your thoughts, what's on your mind. Stay tuned. More Current Sports is coming right up.
America is no longer the world's innovation leader, and now it's runner-up in supercomputers, too. I'm Ira Flatto. Join me on Science Friday for a look at why China is now number one. Plus, are the vegetables on your supermarket shelf still alive? Yes, and they've got rhythm. That's on Science Friday from NPR.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Hey, good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all of the sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. I want to remind you all that we'll be taking your calls at 140, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. We want to hear what's on your mind about any of the topics we discussed today. We just got off the phone with Terry Fitzwater. He is the publisher of the Midwest Racing Scene, and has been covering racing all the way back, dang, all the way back since 1984. He is definitely a veteran in the game. Had a very interesting discussion with him about the racing scene and concerning just the world of racing, period. Talking about the increased popularity when it comes to women in the sport. He talked about Jason Leffler, who sadly just passed away a few weeks ago. Interesting stuff, guys. So if you got a comment on that, you can make a comment on our Current Sports Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Or just give us a call. All right, let's dive into today's topics. We got a lot to cover really quick. The Tigers, the Detroit Tigers, topped the Boston Red Sox last night 4-3. And you just heard it, due to a walk-off homer by Johnny Peralta. Yes, Johnny Peralta saves the day for the Tigers. He had a two-run homer off Andrew Bailey in the bottom of the ninth to give the Tigers the 4-3 victory. Now, Boston led 3-2 when Victor Martinez, that's right, V-Mart, drew a lead-off walk-off off of Bailey, and then Peralta followed with a line drive over the fence in left field for his seventh homer of the year. Detroit improved to only 2-19 when trailing after eight innings, but hey, a win nonetheless. Johnny Peralta, he was something else. He came up huge for the Tigers last night. Now, the Boston Red Sox are having some closing troubles of their own, just like the Tigers in a situation with Papa Grande, Jose Valverde. Jose certainly has that target on his back, and so does Andrew Bailey. He has not been reliable, Andrew Bailey, that is, and he didn't pull out one last night. He didn't even have an out last night when he came in to close the game. Now, Detroit's Jose Alvarez, the kid who comes up from AAA, Detroit's minor league team, and, you know, he had that beautiful start with the Indians in his major league debut. Unbelievable. Yesterday, he allowed 2 runs and 5 hits in 5 innings in his second big league start. So, you know, Alvarez, now, like I said, he held Cleveland to a run in 6 innings in his major league debut. He was simply amazing, amazing. He wasn't bad yesterday. Jose, he did not have a bad outing yesterday. I'm really impressed with this guy. You know, maybe he can earn a spot in the Tigers in the future, but we'll see. Now, so we'll see if Alvarez, I mean, he's expected to make at least one more start for the Tigers, at least in place for injured Anibal Sanchez. Also want to note that Detroit scratched outfielder Matt Tuiasosopo before the game, yesterday's game, because of a mildly strained muscle. So tonight, Tigers in Boston again. Left-handed pitcher John Lester will face Detroit's right-hander Doug Fister. Now, both of these pitchers are 6-4. So Detroit squeaks out when they really need just a victory to get the confidence going again after that 2-1 series loss to the Baltimore Orioles. So 4-3, walk-off fashion. Johnny Peralta, congrats to the Tigers. I also want to know, David Garner, we tried to get David on the show yesterday. This man is a very busy man. I was kind of frustrated. I'm like, I got to get David Garner. Now, David Garner, for those of you who don't know, he was is now a former Spartan pitcher and was drafted in the 7th round of the MLB first-year player draft. And actually, you know, trying to get him on, this is the reason why. I talked to him. He's telling me that his first workout was actually at the Chicago Cubs training camp out in Arizona. Now, he told me it's pretty hot there. He's just trying to stay cool. and he also signed his official contract with a minor league contract, that is, with the Chicago Cubs. So congrats to David Garner. Now, he expects to be assigned to a minor league team soon, most likely with the organization's short season Class A Northwest League affiliate in Boise, Idaho. So congrats to David, man, doing big things. Now, the Baseball America reported that the Cubs recommended a slot value for signing Garner at around $200,000. He's 5'11", 175 pounds. He went 4-for-5 with a 4.10 ERA over his 14 starts for MSU in the spring. And also on Monday, the Baltimore Orioles reached a deal for $389,700 with fourth-round pick Johan Heen in Amherst, New York. Now, of course, he had committed to play for MSU in 2014. So he's with the Orioles now. And last week, incoming junior college transfer Blake Higgins signed with the St. Louis Cardinals for a reported $100,000. So Andrew Rozek, a lot of you know Andrew Rozek. He's a 22nd round pick of the Atlanta Braves. He shines shortly after the first year player draft, and then will begin his pro career in Dansville, Virginia. So interesting stuff. You know, it's great to see former Spartans now going on and playing Major League Baseball with minor league teams. So David Garner has officially signed with the Cubs. Look forward to see what he can do at the next level. All right, the NBA playoffs. The Miami Heat are back-to-back champions of the NBA after beating the San Antonio Spurs 95-88 in a great Game 7 last night. I mean, if you just look at this entire series or this entire playoffs, this is really a great season for the NBA. Very entertaining finals, one of the most entertaining finals in some recent years, tell you that. LeBron James was unbelievable last night. Unbelievable. He led the Heat 37 points, 12 rebounds for the King, and he was also named NBA Finals MVP. This is now his second year in a row winning NBA Finals MVP. So now he has 2 titles, an Olympic gold medal in the past 12 months. Unbelievable, man. Congrats to LeBron. He really, and this is the LeBron James I've been waiting to see, because the stat that jumps out to me, this is the point I was trying to make earlier in this week, is that LeBron needs to be aggressive and look for his shot and be confident out there. When he does that, LeBron can take over the game and really dominate. And that's what he did. Only 4 assists. That's the stat that jumps out at me. He was not passing the ball early in those first 3 quarters or the beginning of the game. He was looking for a shot, being very aggressive. attacking the basket, not being hesitant on his jump shot when San Antonio was leaving him all that space to shoot. He actually made five three-pointers from LeBron James. That, I mean, like I said, he wasn't hesitating on those shots. He was like, all right, you're going to give me room? I'm going to shoot over you. I'm going to make the shot. LeBron James was great. He actually also defended Tony Parker, limited Tony Parker for a horrendous, I think it was like 3 for 12 of shooting. He only had 10 points, Tony Parker. That's unlike him. For the Spurs, Kawhi Leonard had 19 points, 16 rebounds for the Spurs. Manu Ginobili had 18 points, so he kind of, you know, Ginobili definitely stepped up, but it was just not enough. This was a close game throughout most of its entirety. And you also got to give a hats off to Dwayne Wade, who's been playing through that knee injury. He was great with 23 points, 10 rebounds for the Heat, really stepped up when they needed him. When you look at the big three, it was more like the big two yesterday. Bosch was not that great, even though I think he had a solid defensive effort in that game six. Without Bosch, they probably would have lost that game. We wouldn't be talking about it game seven. But Bosch yesterday had a donut, guys. Did not score a basket. Not one basket. Bosch was like a ghost. He was like Casper. Didn't even see him the entire game or didn't even notice him out there, I tell you that. But anyway, the Heat become the NBA's first repeat champion since the Lakers back in 2009 and 2010. And the first team to beat the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA Finals. Now, the Spurs are trying to become the first team to win a Game 7 on the road since Washington beat Seattle way back in 1978. Like I said, Tim Duncan had 24 points, 12 rebounds for the Spurs. But he missed a really crucial shot. It was a point-blank shot that Tim Duncan really doesn't miss. Backing his man down, turns around right at the basket. It bounces off the rim. He actually had another chance to tip it in. Didn't get the tip at all. I mean, that would have tied the game with about 50 seconds left to go. But instead, he misses it, and King James comes down. LeBron James comes down, doesn't hesitate. That's what I keep saying. He was so aggressive last night. It was great to watch him. It was a thrill to watch him last night. But he does not hesitate, pulls up for a jumper, puts the Heat up by four. Really a privilege to watch him play last night. It was great. So, again, Heat 95-88. Listen to LeBron James on just this entire series and just being a better player over time. Here he is.
Well, I mean, I said before the series that I was a better player than I was last time I faced the Spurs. Didn't look that way the first couple games, but I stuck with it. And through all the adversity and throughout, you know, the rhythm that I was in at that point, I just kept going and just trusted, you know, all the work that I put into my game. And to be able to come through for your teammates, for me, I think you know more than anybody how much I care about my teammates and hate letting my teammates down. To be able to come through for my teammates in the biggest moment, the biggest stage, makes me more satisfying than anything in the world.
Man, that's a great bite right there. I mean, one of the things you can say about LeBron James is he is a rare breed in that even though he's a superstar, he's the best player on the planet, but he's a pass-first guy. Pass-first guy, and that's one of the things I want to harp on. I mean, he loves getting his other teammates, his teammates involved and making sure they have a good game and are involved in the game. And that's something you really can't say for a lot of the superstars of the past who have played, and that's something really special. Now, I harp on LeBron all the time about being aggressive and taking over when he needs to. That was one of those games he needed to. But if you look at him throughout the season, he always tried to get his teammates involved, and you know, listening to him right there just shows you how much he harps on making sure his teammates are comfortable out there and are getting the shots that they need. Class act, LeBron James. Here's D-Wade also, who now wins his third NBA title.
This is sweet. You know, this is the sweetest one by far because of everything we've been through, everything I've been through individually. And to get here to this moment, to have that kind of performance, that kind of game, help lead my team, special, man. So special.
So home teams are 15-3 in Game 7s of the NBA Finals. Miami improved to 5-3 all-time in Game 7s in the postseason and became the fourth team to win the final two games at home since the Finals went to the 2-3-2 format in 1985, joining the Los Angeles Lakers in 1988 and 2010 and the Houston Rockets back in 1994 with Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon. Now, Danny Green, who, man, he started the series by making 25 threes in the first five games, a finals record for an entire series. He went 1-for-12 last night, going 1-for-6 from behind the arc. Very uncharacteristic of Danny Green, so he definitely cooled down as the series went on. So congrats to Miami Heat, though. They are the NBA champs. NBA champs for the second straight year. Want to note that New England Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez. This story just gets worse and worse as the days go by. He is now the subject of an arrest warrant drawn up on obstruction of justice charges based on the possible destruction of evidence in connection with the shooting death of his friend who was killed, Odin Lloyd. Who was 27 years old, semi-pro football player. Lloyd was believed to have been killed sometime before dawn on Monday, although his body was not discovered until Monday evening by a teenage jogger. So he's being, Aaron Hernandez is being, an arrest warrant is supposedly being put out for obstruction of justice charges. And this is the reason why police sources told ABC News on Thursday that a major investigation tool, which is the security system at Hernandez's home, which included video, had been intentionally destroyed. And his cell phone was handed over to police, quote, in pieces, and appeared to have been smashed. So that definitely looks like something, somebody is trying to cover up something to tell you the truth. I mean, come on now, the video is destroyed, hands over his cell phone, that's smashed into pieces. And he also, police also want to know why a team of house cleaners were hired on Monday to scrub Hernandez's mansion. Yeah, that sounds like a guilty man to me, ladies and gents. So he hires house cleaners to scrub his mansion. Video is destroyed. His cell phone's in pieces. Oh, this just gets worse and worse and worse. So very interesting stuff with Aaron Hernandez. We'll keep you updated. I'm sure a lot will come out this weekend. Also want to note that the daughter of former New York Yankees manager Joe Torre, Christina Torre, she's like Superman, man. She's getting a lot of props from her dad for catching a baby boy, one-year-old baby boy who had tumbled off a second-floor fire escape in Brooklyn, New York. She caught the baby. The baby was dangling off the fire escape. Christina Torre just happened to be there, held out her arms, caught the baby. Unbelievable story right there. Very random story, but unbelievable story. So Christina Torre, you are a hero for saving that baby. Why in the heck was that baby out in the ledge on the first place? I have no idea, but that's a pretty funny and cool story right there. She says, quote, I didn't really know what was going to happen. She just moved into action when she saw the baby, you know, dangling from this this fire escape. And I'm talking to him saying, don't come down, stay there, she said. He helped himself with his arms. He was dangling, but she knew that he would be coming down very soon. And she caught him. It literally landed right in her arms. Man, that's just, those parents, I tell you, the parents were actually arrested and charged with reckless endangerment, which they should be. I mean, that's a one-year-old baby. You should know where your baby is. I mean, that's crazy stuff. I also want to know, guys, the Big Ten Network. All throughout today, actually happening right now, the Big Ten Network is having a marathon feature of some of the greatest games from all over the years for MSU sports. I mean, some of these include the Spartans wins over Notre Dame in 2010. Of course, the famous Little Giants play. Come on.
Conroy, it's a fake. Bates is going to throw.
I mean, how could you forget that? I mean, I remember being on the field during that Little Giants play. I was an intern with the Big Ten Network Student U, and ESPN needed somebody to hold, you know, just to be out there and, you know, help with the court or whatever, and I got a chance to do that. Man, that was unbelievable. Now, others are the Hail Mary win over Wisconsin from the 2011 season, and games from this past season include wins over Boise State and bowl win against TCU. So tune into the Big Ten Network. They'll be having that all day. Should be fun if you're just sitting home. Maybe some of you even called off work to watch some of those games. You never know. All right, ladies and gents, well, we have to move on to our last segment of current sports. We're going to take your calls about any of the topics discussed today. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Hit us up on Facebook. Tweet me. Stick around. More current sports is next.
Go to war. right up the middle like a missile, and you will not know it hits you. You hear me? I'm a Spartan.
On the next Fresh Air, neurologist Oliver Sacks talks about hallucinations and how they can be triggered by grief, trauma, brain injury, medications, and neurological disorders. And he'll tell us about his personal experimentation with hallucinogenic drugs in the 60s. His book, Hallucinations, is coming out in paperback. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
I'm away, I'm away, I'm away down. I'm away, I'm away, I'm away down. You were the one that was trying to keep me way down. And like the sun, no, you know I'm on my way back.
They tell me I should fix my grill cause I got money now. I ain't gonna sit around in front like I ain't thought about it. A perfect smile is more appealing, but it's funny how this crooked.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm Al Martin. We'll be taking your calls right now to discuss anything that's on your noggin. 517-355-9527. Man, I love that joint. I think J. Cole's CD, Born Sinner, man. Born Sinner is a great CD. You gotta get that. But give us a ball. Give us a ball? What is wrong? It's Friday. I'm ready for the weekend. Give us a buzz. Give us a buzz. Call us. 517-355-9527. We'll take any of your calls, anything that's on your mind. We will discuss it. And it's Friday, so you know what? It's Reflection Friday. That's right. I'm joined by my production assistants, Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, along with the intern, Mike Corey. And we will discuss what happened this week, some of our favorite stories. And you know what? We'll talk about what's on the tube this weekend. What are we watching? Just to wrap up this unbelievable week on Current Sports. What's up, fellas?
Doing good, Mal. How you doing?
I am
blessed. I'm ready to have a ball, man. Let's do it.
Yes, let's do it. I love Reflection Friday. I look forward to this all the time. Not just because it's Friday, because it's a great segment, guys. You get to reflect.
Let's reflect.
Let's do some reflection. What were some of your guys' favorite storylines this week?
Well, I'll just start off and talk about, because I'm a huge hockey fan and everything, this NHL Finals is everything I hoped it would be when it started off. You know, two just great teams in the Blackhawks and the Bruins, and just a four games tied series, three of them going to overtime. Just amazing to have to watch, the pleasure to have to watch these two teams play, because they have been playing outstanding, especially game four. Finally, you know, the fireworks happened, and scoring amidst, you know.
Yeah, that 6-5 game was unbelievable. And I tell you what, I think the NHL Finals have been kind of taken a back seat. Now that the NBA Finals are done, people can be like, all right, let me devote some attention to the NHL. I've been watching them both because I have to, but it's been fun to watch them, man. I tell you that. And the thing is, when you look at, you know, those two teams, this series has been great. I think the only game, last game was the only game that, no, they went to overtime. I think the game before
three,
that
was game three.
Was the only game that didn't go to overtime.
Yeah, it was a 2-0 win for the Bruins.
Yeah, convincing win, quote unquote, for the Bruins. And man, it's been, other than that, every game's gone to overtime. It's been fun to watch, I tell you that.
Yes.
So.
Definitely.
Yeah, and on that note, it's just good to see in both pro basketball and pro hockey, it seems like the two best teams in the league made it to the finals in both sports. So you get heavyweights in both series, and, you know, obviously the NBA Finals go to game seven. Miraculously with the Game 6 win. I guess I don't know if it's my favorite story, but it certainly seems like the most interesting one because it just continues to unfold. It's got to be Aaron Hernandez. It's playing out like the pilot episode of an HBO drama or something. Yeah. Like, this is getting weird. Every day there's new developments, and it just seems to get worse and worse for Aaron, but, you know, just so intriguing. I feel like, you know, how deep does the rabbit hole go?
I know,
and like
right?
you said, I think some stuff's going to come out this weekend, and it's just going to keep building and building
every day. I'm sure
scary.
I'm very interested to see what the next aspect of this story is. I mean the man gets his whole house scrubbed down and surveillance cameras
destroyed.
I mean, come on.
Really looking forward to seeing a Tebow Hernandez connection. Florida days going back, and I don't know if we're gonna see that, because most likely, even if he, who knows what happens to him, but if he manages off, you know, he'll most likely see a suspension coming from the NFL.
Right, yeah, this guy, I mean, he might be, the only football he might be playing is, like, longest yard football. He might be behind bars playing some football. I don't know, man. But interesting stuff. But for me, guys, a lot happened this week. homosexuality in sports. I thought that was a very intriguing discussion that we had earlier in the week. And also, I didn't get a chance to read some of the Facebook comments. When we had Barbershop Wednesday, guys, we asked the public and we debated, how would you handle having a gay athlete on your team? Would you look at them or treat them differently? And we also had two comments, one from Sid, I hope I'm saying this, Dunback. I'm going with Sid Dunback. But he says, quote, good grief, no. Besides, like Gary said, well, Gary Hicks made a comment I'll read in a second. He said, I wouldn't necessarily even know. Hardly going to interrogate everyone to determine that they're gay and thus who to harass, even if I was inclined to treat them differently. Now, Gary Hicks says, people already have gay teammates and often just don't know it. Same in military since dawn of time. So thank you guys for those comments. But like I said, this conversation sparked up a lot of debate, a lot of conversation, and I think it was really interesting to have that conversation through this forum to do that. So also the Heat and the Spurs, I mean, of course, we've talked about it just a minute ago. Unbelievable series, a great final series, one of the best I've seen since I've been alive. I would never forget that game six for as long as I live with the Ray Allen shot and fans leaving and crazy stuff. And also Max Scherzer. Unbelievable. First Tiger since 1909 to start 10-0. That kid, he's something
else. People knew Scherzer was good, but I don't think anybody saw that he would, halfway through the season to say, oh, he's playing better than Verlander.
He is our most dominant pitcher.
Yes, he is. He is something special. And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit. I mean, because he gets a lot of run support when he's out there. At the same time, I mean, 10-0, you can't argue with
that. He's been lucky with the run support and the games that he's played, because not a lot of the other pitchers is like such a Sanchez have been able to come by that with some of the run support.
Exactly. Very true. All right, I understand we have John on line two. How you doing, John?
Hello, this is John calling. I'm doing quite fine.
That's great.
I got a question for you folks. I don't know that much about pro basketball and everything, so whatever the Pistons do, I don't know any better. Mm-hmm. If you guys, if the owner of the Pistons came up to you guys and asked you for your advice, what would you give them?
All right, I guess we go with, thanks, John, for the call, man. For me, I think the Pistons need a point guard. That's just me talking. I think that when you look at the inside presence, the front court of the Pistons, when you look at Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe, if those two play together, they could be a dominant force with a little more, you know, honing on the fundamentals. Andre Drummond is still young, but he's shown flashes of greatness at sometimes, you know, during the season. He's great. When those two play together, they're great. So when it comes to that front court, they're good. Now, the back court is the problem. Stuckey is too inconsistent. He turns the ball over left and right. Will Bynum, you know, when he's on. But sometimes I've seen flashes where he's inconsistent, can turn the ball over. They need a consistent guard who can facilitate, who has that balance between facilitating and scoring. I wouldn't be mad if they got Trey Burke, if Trey Burke falls to us at eighth. But that's just me.
Yeah, the same thing here. First thing that thought in my head was there's no point guard. There's no leader. No leader on the court. And that's something we've discussed, you know, a couple of times when we were mentioning talking about Mo Cheeks being hired,
right?
To be able to have that player coach, you know, be able to, you know, do the best job to coach his players and have like someone like him on the court to be able to, you know, get his message through. And they haven't had that ever since Billups left.
Right.
If I'm giving him advice, it's start looking at the defensive end, because every time the Pistons historically have been, you know, arguably the best team in the conference or one of the best teams in the league, it's defense first.
Right.
And ever since they kind of broke up that core, we have no one who can play any defense. The guards you mentioned, I haven't seen Rodney Stuckey play defense in 5 years. It's just
you
like,
won't see that.
Exactly. It's you know, and they can go out and get a scoring guard, and that's great, but you need a guy who can make his living on the defensive end of the floor, because that identity fits the Pistons franchise the best. That's where you can get players, you know, you can develop a jump shot. You've seen, you know, the Spurs take guys like Kawhi Leonard, who could not shoot threes to save his life coming out of college, but he was lanky, he was athletic, and he was a great defender. And now look at him, he's emerging into a star in the NBA Finals. So I feel like you can develop some offensive skills for guys you're bringing in. And, you know, we're not going to bring in top-flight free agents, so you have to build through the draft or some savvy trades like old school Joe Dumars, but right. It starts with defense, and that's what we hang our hat on. That's what's going to get fans in the stands again.
Yeah, if you go to the Palace, it's like going to a ghost town, it's like a WNBA game.
Unless MC Hammer is playing at halftime, no one's going. When we built that, 04 championship run, it was the going to work, bring your lunch pail to the stadium. Right. They emphasized defense. The city loved it, and they fed off of it, and they built a championship team. So I think they have to kind of go back to that drawing board and just start looking at defense. It's all about defense for the Pistons.
So I think we're leaving out our boy Alex. Alex, he's doing double duty because Aaron is off today. So Alex is engineering, and he's also doing production. He's everywhere. Alex is everywhere. Alex, what are your thoughts, man? First of all, Reflection Friday. We didn't get your thoughts on Reflection Friday, man. Talk about what stuck out to you this week.
All right, Al. Well, first off, my reflection story is the debate of LeBron James between you and I because yesterday we could not...
With 3 minutes left,
brings up at the end of the show again.
2 minutes and 45 seconds left.
The better candidate. Is he a Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan comparison? What's that going to be? I know there's 2 minutes left. I know that you're referencing to that clock. But before you maybe touch on that quickly, in response to the Pistons, I say that... Yes, they do need a point guard. I think we can agree on that. But what do they do with the pieces they already have? What do they do with Ronnie Stuckey and Brandon Knight? Does Knight have that potential to be that point guard? Do you give him 2 or 3 years? Do you acquire someone through free agency? Do you make a big trade? So I think that's another area to think about, is maybe not to neglect the potential of Brandon Knight. But I'm sure, Al, you've got to respond to the LeBron criticism.
Alex, you've left me with 2 minutes to debate with you about LeBron James and Jordan. You would bring us up with 2 minutes left. Well, I kind of brought you in kind of late, though, so we'll put that to blame. But there will never, ever, 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 ever be another Michael Jordan. People have to stop comparing LeBron James to Michael Jordan because simply there will be no other Michael Jordan. What he did for the game as far as popularity goes, his impact culturally, his impact financially will never be matched. LeBron James is the best player on the planet. Those are their styles of play are totally different when you look at that. But Michael Jordan has already, without Michael Jordan, the endorsements wouldn't be there in today's NBA. The impact that basketball has in the music industry wouldn't be there. I mean, there's so many areas that Michael Jordan did not only impact the game on the court, but off it as well. But we're getting to that later. I mean, we got 1 minute left.
Hey, and I agree with you, actually.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right, guys, what are you guys watching this weekend?
All right, quickly, I'm going to watch the season finale of Mad Men. I hope Don becomes interesting again. That's all I'll say.
Nice. All right.
I'll probably be watching the NHL, and also I haven't seen the movie Pitch Perfect, and that comes on HBO this weekend, so I think I might watch that.
Alex, what you watching, man?
Man, I'm probably going to be watching all the interviews with LeBron James. It's going to be absurd. It's going to be absurd.
Sounds like a fun weekend for him. All right, before we leave, I'm just going to be watching the NHL finals, of course. I mean... Really, there's nothing really on TV this weekend. I'm going to start watching Game of Thrones starting tonight, season one. All right, before we leave, we want to give a special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, production assistants, intern Mike Corey, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Wharf, station manager here at WKR. Thanks to Terry Fitzwater for coming in on today's show, publisher of the Midwest Racing Scene. Have a fantastic weekend. We've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing, WKR FMHD3 East Lansing. Be easy, people.